Hi everyone, my name is Jenna Musselman-Pallas and I'm a social worker at the Alliance of Local Service Organizations in Chicago, and I do DV policy work on the national level.
And my name is Mel Santiago. I'm the supervisor for the ceasefire team in Chicago, which is a gang intervention prevention group.
And so what we're going to talk about today is we're going to invite you into our process and share with you a little bit about ongoing conversations that we're having both within our office and between agencies around understanding the intersection between community and family violence, all based around working with the same group of young people and helping keep people safer, and people meaning both those young people who are gang involved and gang affiliated, as well as the workers working with those young people, the agencies, and the communities at large.
We want to bring this conversation up to a head with a case that kind of made it important for us to collaborate with other agencies. And that was, it made national news a couple of years ago. I don't know how many people heard about it, but it was about a domestic dispute that turned into a car ramming in Chicago, where a couple of the girls lost their lives that were in the car, and a couple of them were in critical condition. And so a little bit about that incident is that prior to that car ramming, there was an outreach worker in a barbershop that was getting a haircut and witnessed the same couple in the dispute. Actually witnessed a contact of his slap the female, which prompted him to get out of the barbershop and mediate this dispute real quick. They mediated what we thought was successfully. Everybody went home. A couple of weeks later, we find out that the individual in this incident rammed his car into his ex-girlfriend's car that was loaded with four girls in there. And so this incident, the ramming incident where two women were left dead and two were critically injured, sparked off in Humboldt Park what we call a street war between two gangs. And the reason that happened was because the individual that did the slapping in the first incident was a member of a gang. And his ex-girlfriend, her family members were in a totally different gang. Although they were allies, the two gangs. This little incident, the ramming incident where the two girls lost their life, turned those allies into enemies, and it turned into a virtual street war on the streets. 2 weeks after the car ramming, we had a shooting incident in a festival in Humboldt Park, where it was a Puerto Rican festival, and these two groups met up in the park and started shooting at each other, and fortunately nobody was shot. Ceasefire outreach workers were mediating this dispute, and about 3 weeks later, we had another shooting in our community, where actually a 19-year-old boy was shot and killed. When ceasefire workers went to mediate this dispute, what we found out was that these were the same two groups that were still fighting from 2 months prior to the car ramming. Well, as we were mediating these disputes, when we woke up to when the dust settled, we ended up with three people dead, we ended up with four people critically injured, and two people incarcerated. What I want to point out is that the slap that took place, outreach workers were there when that slap took place. And they did not intervene on the female's behalf, because traditionally outreach workers are only paid to stop shootings.
When trained.
And trained to
stop
shootings.
That's the mission of the ceasefire project.
None of us were trained to deal with a victim of domestic violence. And so even though we had incidents that were coming up that had root causes of interpersonal relationship violence or domestic violence, we never addressed the female. Not once. Not once that we asked how she was doing, not once that we asked, is there anything we can do for you, are you okay? We simply went in there, we settled the gang dispute, and we went home. And so this incident, what it did was made us go back into our previous cases that we were already mediating. And we gathered, I think it was about 53 cases that we've already mediated prior to this conversation. And what we found was that 11% of those approximately had some type of root cause of domestic violence or some type of interpersonal relationship violence. And when we realized that, that is what prompted our office to continue this conversation about collaboration between agencies.
And so there's always the so what, right? And so, you know, it was through our cross-training and collaboration within our office. You know, our office is a unique place in that we have both local work, which is what Melvin has talked to you about in terms of community violence, and then we also do national work around domestic violence policy. And so it was through sort of learning about each other's work and just sharing ideas and kind of getting more of an understanding of not only sort of what each other does on a daily basis, but then also the meat behind the work that sort of led us to think maybe, like, we need to look at this in a different way, and we need to look at this from different angles, you know. And it was through that, through our own cross-training, that really brought us to the point that helped us look at these cases in a more in-depth way. And so some of the ways that we cross-train are, you know, a lot of our outreach team as part of CSPIRE are now domestic violence advocates. They've completed the 40-hour training. There isn't that type of formalized training for other people to learn about community violence, so we've had to do that in more informal ways. You know, we go around the neighborhood. They make sure to help us understand the different culture, the different gang cultures, the different gangs in our areas, the different safety and risk factors that would be need to be considered when working with young people, both young men and young women who are gang involved and gang affiliated. And that's also led us to do brought us into our next sort of recommendation around collaboration. And, you know, you always hear talks about collaboration, but for us, really the meat behind the work that we're doing right now is relationship building. And that started within our office, and now we've expanded it to include a violence prevention working group, which is a working group that meets every couple weeks. That's a meeting. We're on our sixth meeting. And that's with domestic violence agencies close to our agency, as well as community violence agencies. And that's really putting young people who are in the community at the center of the work. Whereas if you're working with a young woman who is gang involved or gang affiliated, and she needs shelter services because her partner is has a very high-ranking position in one of the gangs in the area, what are the safety considerations for her? And then what are the safety considerations for the advocate working with her, for the shelter, for the community as a whole? And what would the safety considerations be for the outreach worker who may have referred, who may be working with the young man and therefore help this young woman get hooked up with additional services? And so we're really trying to think strategically from a safety, putting safety at first for the victim, for the workers, and also helping people think about, well, how can we reduce the rate that the person who is going to be prompted to commit an act of violence, that's going to be reduced. And so it's through that collaboration right now, you know, that we're sort of working through those more in-depth issues.
A little thing on collaboration is we also like to demonstrate that collaboration, which is why you always see Jen or male or female from our office doing these presentations together. Mm-hmm. Because we try to demonstrate to the public that this is how we want to collaborate, you know what I'm saying? Because traditionally domestic violence agencies are traditionally work with women, or mm-hmm. are women, and community violence agencies are traditionally work with men and are men working in the field. So we try to demonstrate that collaboration as well in our presentations.
Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, we go to trainings together, we do our meetings together. When we're looking at cases, we bounce ideas off of each other around safety factors and risk factors, you know, because if you're working with a young woman who's gang involved or her partner is gang involved or affiliated, you know, the access to weapons is different. The relationship to people who have committed past acts of violence is different, you know. And so we really needed Melvin and my colleagues' help to sort of think through those other issues, as well as, you know, just as much as Melvin has needed to learn about the power and control wheel, you know. So we've really sort of used the different expertise in the office to sort of think differently about our work. And then the last sort of recommendation that we can kind of talk through is confidentiality. And given the high risk, the high rates of violence and the high risk people are at in terms of both the victim, in terms of the person who may be the perpetrator of the violence to commit more acts of violence, it's really important that, you know, we keep confidentiality kind of at the center of this conversation. Because as we know, a DV advocate relationship with the intimate with the victim is protected, at least in Illinois. And then with community violence workers, you know, their relationship with their participant is also protected. And a breach in confidentiality that can discredit the community violence worker's reputation on the streets. It can put a victim in danger in terms of the DV advocate. So there really needs to be some information sharing, you know, because if you're working with a victim whose intimate partner is a higher ranking in a higher ranking whose partner is a higher ranking person in a gang, you know, you're going to need to have Ceasefire do some, or at least the guys in our office do some supportive work to help mediate a conflict in a different way. That's going to be different than just calling, you know, calling the police or involving kind of a more typical kind of criminal justice response.
The other thing about confidentiality that is very important on the community violence standpoint, simply because Ceasefire workers, they work on credibility. A lot of them were gang members or were gang leaders or ex-prisoners, and so the reason they're effective in stopping the streets is because of their credibility. They left the gang to A's, they didn't do anything that was harmful to the gang, so therefore they're looked at still in high regards. If I'm looked at as, if I'm helping a client who's in a dispute with his girlfriend, and I, all of a sudden now, because of this new thinking, connect his girlfriend to a DV agency who is now telling his girlfriend that she needs to get the police involved, and that gets back to the person that I'm working with, then that confidentiality and that credibility kind of goes out the window. Because the first thing he's going to say is, man, you said you can come in here and help, and now my girl's trying to lock me up and keep me at the crib. Not only that, a lot of times that we're dealing with our participants, the police are not there to help us. We're there on our own, you know what I'm saying? We're working with high-risk individuals that do have access to guns, that are really, for the most part, are violently prone. And so now that question comes up, and I'm in a basement with them somewhere, and you can see what position I'm in now, right? And mm-hmm. So that's why the confidentiality is very important in both ways. And so we just want to keep that in mind for you guys.
And how do you do it?
It's done. It's done because of the relationship that I'm able to have with that particular individual. If I don't have a relationship with that particular gang member, I do have a relationship with his gang leader. So if he's not listening to me, I can always go to his gang leader and say, this is what's going on here. I need your help. The funny thing about gangs are that it's in their literature not to assault women. You see? I mean, though they don't apply it, it's in their laws. So we can always go to the chief and say, look, it's written in your laws that you don't do this. But here's this guy doing this. I need your help to help me stop this from going on. Because if he gets arrested and he says you're his chief, you go down. And so there's interest in his part to help me get this guy, you know what I'm saying, not to violate his girlfriend or not to do anything that's inappropriate.
Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of led us to sort of think about in terms of next steps. Well, there's no way that we can help, you know, create more safer avenues for women if we're not also working with men. And so that's the point that we're at right now, in addition to the Violence Prevention Working Group, which is where we work sort of more with the DV service providers to help provide that kind of direct referral and think through some of those safety considerations, you know, for young women, as well as sort of look at lethality assessments in a different way. If you're a young woman, partner or herself is gang involved, as well as, so now we're sort of at the point where we're in development with working with young men too, and it's using some of the things that the outreach team, all the tools that they're already doing so well, and applying them to violence against women.
And it's not a one size fits all. What works particularly in Chicago's urban communities may not work in your community, but it is a program that you can tweak to fit your particular circumstances.
You know, and there have been a lot of people who have talked about, you know, silos. And this was our sort of effort to kind of break down the silos within our office. Because before we started working together, we kind of saw them also as kind of these two separate things, local work, national work, community violence, domestic violence. But then it's through this other sort of looking at, well, what's our common mission, you know, where can we come together? And it was all around safety, you know, that this sort of other work kind of came out of that. We just got acute for time, and we had 5 minutes left, so we wanted to make sure that we left time for questions, and we went through a lot of the material. Did anybody have questions about the timeline?
How about we do, like, a general questions for everyone?
Sure.
Sure.
Right, we can have a dialogue, because I think there's good commonality across the
Thank you, guys.